Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Thank you so much. Welcome, everybody. I'm so looking forward to this today because I feel that this is an amazing opportunity for us not to just come together with knowledge, but come together energetically as a group to create change. As you heard in the introduction, I'm an intuitive. That's a nice word for a psychic. I started out as a test subject back in the early 80s when science and universities and the military was interested in the extended capacities of the human mind. Because my bent is more practical and scientific, hence the name of my first book, Practical Intuition, I was less interested in the esoteric uses of extended perception, things like prediction or telepathy, and more interested in how they could help us all create better lives. Most people who are particularly gifted in ESP, in extrasensory perception as psychics, usually are not very capable of living life. They may have all the answers, but they're not embodied enough to be able to engage in any kind of useful activity. As a matter of fact, the intuitive state is actually a dissociative state. You are out of your senses and out of your body. So I, as a young early 20s, I'm 61 now, so I've had 40 years to work on it. I, as a young intuitive, thought, oh, wow, I have a lot of information that I have no idea what to do with because I'm not in the in my present life. So my bias is, how do we use embodiment to create better lives, stronger relationships, healthier bodies, more profitable companies? How do we use these abilities that have now 60 years of science behind them? We now can see that when a computer randomly generates an image, that a sitter's brain responds to the image that will be generated in the future. We now have the ability to see what the brain is doing and to see that these extrasensory abilities not only exist, but that we all have them and we need to learn how to manage them. For today, what I'd like to do is answer four questions. What is embodiment? What keeps us from using its power, our power, to manifest in our lives? How will you be transforming, ideally, through these experiences in embodiment in this conference? And how can you use it to change your life, your relationships, your body, and your experience of all of that? So that's what we're going to do today. And I, being an intuitive and being overwhelmed with information and training people who get overwhelmed with information, I think that the best way to learn something is by engaging in it. So I'd like you to really engage in this process. More important than what I have to say to you is what it stimulates in you. So I would like to suggest that you take notes on your experience today. I've designed this presentation really to initiate change. And before we begin, I would like to tell you that my favorite quote, which is the good scientist suspends disbelief and runs the experiment anyway. Intuition, embodiment, these are tools. They're not beliefs. They work whether you believe in them or not. The important thing is to engage an evidence-based methodology so that you are doing something causal. I do this, this happens. And in order to do that, it's really important to document each step of the process in the simplest possible way so that you can see that your tools work for you. I suggest that you write down your goals before the conference and not a 10 goal laundry list, because that diffuses perception. But what are your major goals? Why do you want to do this conference? So human beings are alchemists. We all have the ingredients to create anything, but we often don't know how to engage in being able to use them. And that is what embodiment is about. Now I'm going to see if I can do a share screen for you. I don't know that I'm going to be able to. Oh, here we go. So, have goals. The most dangerous thing you can do is to stop wishing, because you are a filing system. You know, you are a machine that is either guided by your habits, histories, and beliefs, so you replicate the same thing over and over again, or by your goals. When you are embodied, your basic goals are always addressed, and we're gonna talk about what embodiment is in a moment. But when you are embodied, your basic goals are addressed. All aspects of survival are addressed. Survival itself is not a goal, because when you are embodied, survival is your idle speed. Health, enough resources, connection, and contentment. Now, I call this presentation the power of presence, because embodiment replaces doing with being. Your power is in your presence. So normally our attention is engaged in thinking, hoping, fearing, wondering, searching, doing, etc., etc. Our attention is everywhere but in the moment. When you are embodied, you are able to use that in the moment, use that same attention in the moment to create. So I want to give you a very simple definition before we go on of embodiment. Embodiment is experiencing the here and now, the present, with all five of your senses. So it is literally, where am I? What am I seeing, tasting, smelling, hearing? What am I feeling? Which, not to be confused with emotion. Even advanced physics is first perceived through those five senses. So what I'd like you to do right now, because I want to build a bear, I call this. What I want you to do right now is write down three goals. And as you do it, be fully present in this moment as much as you possibly can. And I'm going to speak in a moment about what gets in the way of embodiment. So embodiment is simply that experience of presence, of the present. So take a moment and really, you know, the present changes. We all go Zen. We all get fixed. And I'm very anti close your eyes, take a deep breath, go Zen. Because when you need your tools is not going to be when you're sitting in a mountaintop, swap fly, don't swap fly. You need your tools when you're engaged in life, in negotiation, if you're a doctor in diagnostics, if you're a trader in what the market's doing, if you're a mother in, you know, keeping track of all those pieces that create life. That is not this. That is this. So during this presentation, I want you to practice that being in that moment, in your body, in your senses right now. And I'm going to talk in a moment about why that's so hard. But first, we need goals, because goals contextualize everything for us. Goals are not about positive thinking. I am not a believer in positive thinking. If a bullet's coming at you and you don't see it and you don't do something different, that bullet's going to hit you. Negative thinking is also not very useful, because if you have blinders on and all you're seeing is what's wrong, that is all you can move toward. You're not seeing any other destination. Empowered, realistic thinking, which is, this is the reality now. But here are my goals. So here are my tools. Sure, I wish my tools were different. I wish I were different. But this is where I am now, and this is where I'm going. And I am a being capable of change. And of course, not only are you capable of change, but you can't avoid change. Any of us, and I am certainly guilty of this, who've ever tried to avoid change, you realize change is unavoidable. So you have your goals and you're fully present. I'm gonna see if I can share screen with you again. It might be a little funny, a psychic, an intuitive, someone who makes their living predicting the future, talking about the power of presence. But, and let me see if I can you get this on here? When you are embodied, so when you are in the moment, in your senses, in your perceptions, those same perceptions are able to perceive the future. So from this moment, you can still sense, without going out of yourself to it, sense the future. You can reframe the past. So what's not a perception in the past, a habit in the past that is not useful to you, you now can live a part of it or reinterpret it in a way that's useful. In the present, you can allow intuition to do its job of preparing you through the awareness of what is going on beyond your immediate environment. And you can be in the present, and that is what embodiment is. Be in the present using the power of presence. So in the present is the only place you can create change. From the present, you can change all of the rest of the reality of being. When you are in the present, you have literally presence. You live in four time zones all the time, and those time zones interfere with your ability to have presence. And once again, presence is full embodiment. Presence is being versus doing. I'm sure you've all had the experience of being at a party or in a group or even, in a moment of crisis, of community crisis, and somebody walks in and they don't do anything. Literally, their presence is the catalyst for everyone else's doing. They hold the room. So the four time zones that we live in all of the time, and they confuse our ability to be present, is the present, where we have our power, where we should be, where we need to be to have an effect in the world. The past, which really, and listen, we spend a lot of time in the past. Just notice where your attention went in the last hour. A lot of it was the past. So the past, containing our habits and our interpretations, mostly misinterpretations, and things that are not really often useful for us in the present. The non-local, so research has shown, and you can Google this on PubMed and major universities like Stanford and Duke, as well as the military remote viewing research, we live non-locally. Your anxiety may not be yours. You may be experiencing someone else's point of view. You can feel people at a distance, hear people at a distance, actually affect people at a distance. That is a non-local time zone. It is, in a sense, time out of time. And then we experience the future, not always with clarity, because we experience the future depending on our point of view. We experience a possible future, and we spend a lot of time there instead of, once again, creating in the present. So the ideal use of embodiment, so being in you, being in your senses, it sounds so simple, but if you guys are actually trying to do that right now, it is not. We need breath, meditation, yoga, a good meal, a good night's sleep, connection, so many things to be able to, as much as possible, fully inhabit the present where our power to act is. We live in the past, and the past really leads us to misinterpret cues in the present, and also not have the flexibility and access to new behaviors. And then the non-local, where we are getting feelings, senses, ideas, impulses that may or may not be our own, and we are going different places. You know, often one of the things that's really interesting about the things like remote viewing is that we are remote viewing all the time. We are in a different location. Once again, notice in the last hour, how many different locations has your energy and attention gone to? Where your attention is, that is where your energy is. And one of the things that's really interesting about parapsychological research is that you in real time are actually in those places and have an effect there. And the future. And you can only change the future in the present. And you can choose between different futures in that present. So what gets in the way, and I want to get off this split screen for a moment so you don't have to look at it while I'm speaking. What gets in the way of your ability to embody? The same things that got in the way of your ability to fully experience yourself in life as a very young child get in the way now, and we're going to go over what they are. But before we do, I would like to suggest to you that you react the same way in crisis that you did when you were 3 years old. It was partly genetics, partly your upbringing, partly beliefs, even pre-verbal beliefs that began to structure your life quite completely, even when you were 2, 3, 4, and 5. In normal life, we are a collection of response types. We are adaptive. However, when we are not embodied, when we are not in full possession of ourselves, when we are flooded and overwhelmed in crisis or with too many changes, changes that overwhelm our ability or even challenge our ability to cope, we tend to go to one type, and you are always for a lifetime that same reactive type. There are 4 types, and as with everything else, every type has a gift. One of the reasons it's so important to know your type is going back to our goals, which is our filing system, which allows us in our embodiment to make choices. One of the things that gets in the way of our goals is the way we react and create reality in a programmed, unconscious, knee-jerk way. We are held together by our patterns and habits. Patterns and habits are a really good thing, except that when we want to make change, we need effective ways of creating new rituals to replace old patterns, because new things need a new structure. So I want to share screen again with you here. There are four types: anger, depression, denial, and anxiety. So anger, when things are overwhelming, explodes. And that explosion keeps them from being present and embodied in the moment. It also alienates. Anger lives in the present, but in the unmitigated present, in the unevolved and misunderstood present. Depression sinks. And once again, we're all four types, except when we're flooded. Depression sinks. It gives up and it lives in the darkest past. Depression gets overwhelmed and sinks under the weight of experience. And so, of course, problems pile up, and it's you can't embody the present if you're not in contact with it. Denial avoids and distracts. So it lives in the non-local, ungrounded experience. Denial isn't having the experience of what's really going on. Denial is having some unrelated experience. And of course, what happens is the elephant in the room eventually sits on them. Anxiety, and I'm the poster child for the anxiety type, as are most childhood intuitives. Anxiety freezes and scatters and lives in the most disastrous future. Anxiety types, you know who you are. And so anxiety doesn't addresses all these problems that will probably never happen, but misses the problems in the moment that risk their success. So every type has a gift. When you deal with your gift of type, you are more able to effectively embody in the present, and you have access to your superpower. So anger has the passion and energy. So anger, the anger types are the people who, after the devastating hurricane, mobilize everyone and get the town rebuilt and hook up power that they've stolen from another island. And anger gets things done. So the important thing for anger to realize is that the power isn't in the reaction, the power is in the passion. Depression has depth and insight. Depression is able to find solutions none of us can see, because depression really sinks down lower than any of us gets and is able to get the gems beneath. Denial is effective. Denial, one of the gifts of denial is that you can filter out a lot of the miscellaneous stuff that distracts and overwhelms most of us. So denial, when used effectively, is effective and competent more than anybody else. Denial types are the people who you say, oh my goodness, we totally forgot we had an event tonight. We have 150 people coming in. Denial, boom, 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 able to get it done because they can screen out what's not necessary. Anxiety types are the prescient intuitives. Anxiety, when they manage their type, can see the future and they have the awareness to be able to react to it productively in the present. But anger needs to discharge the explosive energy. Depression needs support and self-support, even in tiny ways, to be able to use that depth and insight to be embodied. Denial needs to feel something, anything, in order to inhabit the present and not some local, non-local place, and use their ability, their effectiveness to be able to create change. And anxiety needs to be able to distract from their hyper focus and distract from their need of reassurance of something that never most likely will happen, and do something that has a complete and terminal end. Anxiety, when anxiety gets rid of the superfluous, then anxiety is really able to inhabit the moment, and the moment becomes super, super manageable with their ability of prescience. They know what's coming next. So anger types, and most of you know who you are. There is there's a test in Welcome to Your Crisis, which is a book I wrote. But also, you know, you can think back to nursery school. You think back to the ways you've reacted and how you've created problems, and also how you've created successes, and you will pretty much know your type. Anger needs to simply discharge energy. Depression needs to ask for support to achieve one tiny specific thing so that they're able to engage in life. Denial needs to feel, because once they can feel, they're aware. And anxiety needs to just instantly repattern and distract by completing tasks. Organize a sock drawer. Continue to repeat tasks that can be completed until they're calm enough to be present in the moment. So, yeah.
Laura, sorry, just to let you know that I've just sent a poll for the participants.
Yes, I saw.
So people can answer and see which type they are.
And I will take questions soon on type. So the important thing with embodiment is embodiment makes you interactive. And interactive is where your power and your pleasure is. When you are embodied, you're not pulled back and forth by sensations or feelings or imaginations or the past. You are, whether it's in the boardroom or the bedroom, you are fully present. And you have an innate alert system, remember the four time zones, for what you need to resolve from the past to be more effective in the moment. What is coming up that you need to deal with in the moment? You have the ability to be alerted if someone you love is in trouble. But when you are always merged in those time zones, what you don't have is the ability to be here now in a way that you can actually change everything. So that is embodiment. First, have a goal, because goals are the lighthouse of the human spirit. Goals are our filing system. When you have purpose, which is another word for goals, for true goals with integrity, when you have purpose, research shows you are more effective, pain hurts less, you live longer. There is so much research on the power of purpose, and purpose is having a goal, whether that's, you know, we've all heard stories of those people who want to make it to their daughter's wedding and against all odds they do, or the, you know, homeless parent who needs to support their child and starts $1 million cookie business. $1 million back when I first saw that story 30 years ago was a lot of money. You know, we've all heard those stories. Your goals are your purpose, and they contextualize everything. And your goals actually are experienced in the present, because when you have a goal, everything that you experience, past, present, non-local, everything you experience is contextualized within those goals. Now, that in and of itself is a very powerful way to embody, because of course you can embody something in the past, something in a non-desirable future. You can embody someone who is in pain. That's not helpful to you or to them. excuse me, what's helpful is your ability to be in the present. Your tools are in the present. Your power is in the present. You change everything in the present. And that is embodiment. So have your tools, have your goals, be in your senses. Sounds simple, but if you guys have been doing this for the whole time I'm talking, I bet you've been able to do it 1/100th of the time. It is a very, very, very powerful practice. Is that practice of being fully here. And then embodiment also gives us the receptors and the contact boundary for connection. So I want to speak a little bit about spirituality. And that, of course, is exactly what you would expect an intuitive, a psychic, to speak about. But I want to give you a different perspective. I'm often accused of not being spiritual enough, even though most of my work for the public I do for free. I make my living by predicting the future for large companies. I've had the same companies for nearly 30 years, and I use the contact boundary between self, between I, and spirit, the energy we all share, for very practical, very verifiable, and very profitable reasons. However, I want to give you another perspective on spirituality. If you believe in spirituality, in energy, then spirit is oneness, correct? Spirit is the highest elevation of our oneness. It is our unity. So you are by definition already spiritual. That's saying we are spiritual beings having a human experience. I think we're better at being spiritual beings than being human beings, being effective human beings. Spirit and that multi-billion dollar business of spirituality is actually regressive. When you try to be more spiritual, you are trying to be what you came from. So spirituality is wonderful, that kind of merging into oneness, that elevating out of that human experience is a wonderful commercial break. But when we speak about embodiment, as incarnate beings, as beings who need to survive in a physical body, in a physical world, I think the most productive way to think about it is spirituality is the fuel, but individuality is the car. And actually, we are evolving spirit. If you think about spirit, it is all powerful, it is all knowing, and it is all present. It's omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. And that is not a formula for change. Who's making the change? You are. You are by not moving away from reality and your experience and power and your obligation to be part of it, but by taking that connection and creating a wonderful, productive, profitable, loving life for yourself, and then by extension for the we that you represent in your eye. So unity is a really important aspect of embodiment. Embodiment is your clarity as an eye, as an ego. And ego's gotten a bad name, but without a somewhat sturdy ego, you'd be in a psych ward. So ego is, I want, I believe, I love. Any word that starts with an I is about ego. I defend, I support. Those are I statements. Those are ego statements. Those are not spirit statements. Those are embodied statements. I take responsibility for. I take responsibility for this moment that I'm inhabiting. And yes, this moment isn't whoosh. Everybody who does anything that is supposed to be spiritual thinks it's supposed to feel good. Actually, healing is really challenging and often feels very challenging. How do you know you're embodying effectively? Your life changes. Your body changes. Your relationships change. So embodiment also includes the experience of unity. It includes I am and all the other I statements with that connection to everything, because that everything is also you. Now, if we're always spiritual, if we're always connected, why in our embodiment, in our experience, do we need an awareness of that? Well, you may have a hammer in the house and you may have a nail, but if you don't know that the hammer is used for pounding in the nail, you're not going to be able to use it. So simply knowing that in your experience of here and now, of separateness, there is also the experience of oneness, it allows you to direct that oneness through the prism of your embodiment in this moment now toward the creation of your goals and your ability to be a guide and healer for others. So embodiment is the power of your presence, not your doing, your presence in this moment now. Try embodying the next time you're walking into a difficult situation, not thinking what will it be or what will happen or this has happened before, all those other places you go that don't inhabit this moment. Try just being in you now, knowing that you will experience what you need to know, remember what you need to remember, be able to perceive what you need to perceive, but with your attention being in your senses in the moment, and notice how you become that central element that brings everything together. And what is there more powerful than that power of community? So I want to check my notes and make sure there is nothing that I want to tell you. I want to talk about being reactive, being proactive, and being interactive. Embodiment is not about being proactive. And it's not about being reactive, because in the moment, embodiment really is about taking what is and using all of your skills, including intuition, to interact in a new way. You know, we often think proactive is good, but proactive isn't always good because you can miss pieces of a reality. Being interactive with yourself, with others, with your environment, that is where organically, without all that thinking, knowing the things we went through in the beginning, organically, you do the right thing for the future. You recreate the past without changing it, but you revision it to support a you that can deal appropriately and effectively with a reality now. You free intuition to give you the information you need to know, but filtering the information that's not appropriate. I have intuitive students, and often the first thing they do is predict, you know, earthquakes no one's going to listen to them about. That's not useful. Instead of perhaps predicting the market or predicting what their child's allergic to that's giving them eczema, or, you know, predicting things non-locally that actually have an effect. My first book was called Practical Intuition because it was written in the early 90s when intuition was all about getting in touch with your spirit guides, which is great. But a lot of these people who were getting in touch with their spirit guides couldn't pay their bills, didn't have relationships, were making bad health choices, were making unsafe decisions. So intuition, first and foremost, needs to do what you are here to do. And what you are here to do is to make a successful material reality for yourself, and then by contact for others. So that is I would love to open this up for questions. Let me get the poll off here. And let me see here.
So just to let you know, Lara, that people have been answering the poll, and actually nearly half of the participants that have the anxiety type, and then it's fairly separated.
I doubt that. I think that if you've been answering the poll, you would probably be, that was their poll, not my poll, you would probably be 25% of each type, you know, a quarter anger, a quarter depression, a quarter anxiety. We live in anxious times. And of course, anxiety is not a bad thing. It's a bad thing if you live there and make decisions from there. But all of the types are really important. I'm an anxiety type, but without a little depression, I wouldn't have much depth. Without a little rage, I wouldn't have much energy. You know, without a little denial, I certainly wouldn't be able to do anything because I'd just be overwhelmed with anxiety. I wouldn't be able to sort. So there are times where one reaction type tends to, we're more aware of it. Believe it or not, most of you are functioning well. Most of you are experiencing all four types. You may be aware a little more of your anxiety. The important thing to do to type yourself is, this is a metaphor I use a lot, an example. As a little kid, or when you're fired from a job, someone takes your crayons away. The depression type says, oh my God, you know, it's happening again. I'll just sit here and not do anything. Just gets overwhelmed by the burden and makes it worse. And then the kid takes the rest of their toys. The rage type punches the kid, doesn't get to color, doesn't get the crayons, gets sent to detention, and all goes downhill from there. The anxiety type gets frozen and it absolutely, or seeks reassurance and does absolutely nothing without noticing that there's another box of crayons right next to them they can use. And the denial type says, oh, I don't care anyway, and allows that same bully to do so many awful things until the entire nursery school experience has been completely ruined, but doesn't matter to them, even though their life gets more and more impoverished. Those are the four types. It's really reaction styles. So yes, we're all stuck in our houses. We're, you know, our jobs are up in the air. Our, you know, so many changes are happening. And by the way, life is full of change. There was a great Wall Street Journal article about how many new businesses are starting during this time. Lots of new relationships are starting during this time because guess what? You can't hop in bed right away. You actually have to get to know each other because you're meeting online often. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. I've been really encouraging my students to look at the can do, but you are noticing anxiety. Anxiety's in the news. You know, we're almost creating a culture of anxiety, but actually when you look person to person, that a lot of people aren't in crisis. They're doing all four types. This is giving them depth. This is giving them insight. This is giving them effectiveness. A lot of people have gotten rid of awful jobs they hated but paid them a living and started new businesses. You know, this is making them focus on wonderful things that they can have and do that didn't even occur to them. A lot of people are using a combination of their types to really grow. And we're doing the human version of spirituality. And the human version of spirituality is what I have in excess, let me give to you. Because to me, it's excess. To you, it's something that empowers you. I said in an interview, and for me, it's worth saying again, COVID has been a really interesting metaphor about the changes we need. Every single individual right now can sicken or even kill one another. Every single person is important. Our people we've overlooked in our society are actually the people who are keeping things running. You know, the people who are delivering our packages and stocking our shelves and cleaning our streets. And we all have to be mindful, present, embodied in the well-being of each other. Because if we are, this goes away. And it's really a wonderful metaphor for the issues that are coming up now, disenfranchised people. We can't. One person without a mask, doesn't matter who they are, they're a problem. You are a problem. If you don't follow the rules of community, no person is expendable. When you embody, you realize that. Because when you embody, everything that's around you is part of your ability to reach your goals. And you become purposeful as a part of the community's ability to reach theirs. So let me look at your questions.
There is one, Laura, if you want, that some people remark and wanted to ask is, can I say embodiment is the same as being mindfulness?
Yes, embodiment is very much the same as mindfulness. I use them interchangeably, except that I think that embodiment, mindfulness allows what is to be. Embodiment, in the way that I use it in my work, which is often with companies or things merging that don't necessarily get along, is not only am I aware, am I embodied in the present where my power is, but now I also, with embodiment, am someone who makes choices about it. And embodiment, in my definition, is an active and an interactive state. It's not just an experience of self, but it's an experience of self that integrates an experience of everything else around self, including an extended reality.
There's another question that was, how can we stay in the present when our minds are racing or distracted by what's coming next?
So that is absolutely an anxiety type. You just typed yourself, because that is not what everybody does. So you just typed yourself. It is, you know, there's a dirty word in our culture. Nobody likes it. And that word is discipline. Just like your patterns took years and years to develop, your solutions need discipline if you want them to develop quickly. So it is the constantly, oh, I'm there again. Okay, what's going on here? Oh, I'm there again. What's going on here? And if you're an anxiety type, your cure, so to speak, is engaging in effective action that has an end, like cleaning a sock drawer or doing the dishes. And it's very hard with anxiety, because anxiety compels us to stay in that hyper focus with it. So discipline is really putting one foot in front of the other and doing the right thing again and again, and always pulling yourself back to that discipline will actually create magic, will create alchemy so quickly in your life. Discipline is an amazing gift.
Lovely. There's another question from Nathan, which says, would you say that self-trust allows us to organize our lives using the right information and impulses?
I am not big on trust, because you can trust things like, you know, I trust science, but science said that hydrogenated oils were good and now we find they're deadly. So I think that trust is not the perspective we're looking for. I think that we are looking for road signs. So to use mindfulness effectively, it is awareness through your five senses. And then, you know, your sixth sense is cognition, is your putting together those five senses and creating conclusion. And often those conclusions are wrong, but that is a sense that needs to be integrated. Trust, I think, has no place in the use of tools. I think that acceptance of self. So this is where I am now. Listen, we've all been, we're all part people we don't want to be, you know, and yet we're agents of our own change and change in the world. So I think self-acceptance is helpful because then we don't have to pretend that we're not our shadow. We can say, okay, this is a shadow and something I want to change. So we can be more embodied. We can use more of ourself because we are, of course, you know, light and shadow, ability and disability, every single one of us. But I think verification should replace trust. Your tools should be causal. Embodiment should be causal. I notice that when I embody, all of a sudden synchronicities, meaningful coincidences happen and things go right. I notice when I go into work embodied, I am able to respond in a way that empowers me and empowers others. You know, I think, and documenting that proof, when people set goals, I always ask them, because we work a lot as an energetic community, so it's a little esoteric, but I say, okay, you've set a goal. You don't have to believe in the goal. Your whole dialogue can be, oh my God, this is ridiculous. As long as you put one foot in front of the other and document what happens once you set that goal and endeavor to use discipline to live it in an embodied way, because that documentation will show you that that what you do causes what you live, what you create, what you manifest in the popular word now. And that is true whether you're trying to heal your body, whether you want to find true love, whether your company's having problems and you need to be able to create the next new big thing. Embodiment has nothing to do with belief and everything to do with the power of your being present in all of its complications, but also in all of its power.
Great. There's another question that says, when you're feeling lost, what actions should one take to figure out your goal?
When you're feeling lost?
Lost.
When you're feeling lost, you should be in your moment. And from your moment, you will see a guidepost. If you are trying to figure, you are not in this time zone. As Einstein said when he spoke at his friend Bezos' funeral, he said, time is a persistent illusion. So when you are embodied, you're already in your goal achieved, but you are becoming the person who can meet those points together, you and your goal. It's not that your goal isn't there. It's that you are not present enough to connect with it.
So there's a lot of questions coming up, but I will ask you the last one, which was, what is your take, Laura, that we can improve our intuition by embodiment work? Or do you think some people are born with a more immediate, stronger capacity in that?
Absolutely. Intuitives have damaged brains. And the perfect trifecta for a brilliant intuitive is traumatic early experiences, definitely before the age of six, brain injury, and I actually, because I have brain injury, can't remember the other one. But and a seizure disorder. You don't want to be, just like hyper-flexible people tend to get injured, you want to be intuitive enough to be effective in your life, your love, and your business, and your health, and your experience. But you don't want to be so intuitive that you're incapacitated. There's a reason why most psychics are, you know, living in sixth-floor walk-ups with their cats on chocolate and never going out and not making enough money. It's because it doesn't matter if you can perceive everything. You need to be embodied enough to do something with it. And that is why, for me, I'm incredibly intuitive and I'm very grateful for that ability/disability. But I work very hard on being present, on being embodied, because knowing everything does nothing but overwhelm you and make you an anxiety type. Being embodied means you can know this much, not an infinite amount, but you can use it so it makes you successful. And your job is to put your own oxygen mask on first, is to be successful, is to be happy, is to be healthy, is to be part of a community that is supportive of you and that you are proud to be a part of. You are here not to be more spiritual, but to be more effective as a human. And that is the purpose of embodiment. And I hope that as you listen to all the other speakers, goals in mind, practicing, connecting, embodying what it is they're speaking about, whether or not you agree with it, suspending judgment enough to run the experiment like a good scientist, you know, I hope that you will also notice that your life changes and document these changes. Embodiment is not a belief. Just like intuition, embodiment is a practice, and it's one that can change your life.
Thank you very much, Laura. Actually, there's a last question, but it comes with what I wanted to ask you, is how can I learn to trust my intuition? So where can we find you?
Again, intuition is not about trust. I train intuitives on Laura Day Intuit on Instagram. I do a lot of free intuitive work on Facebook at Laura Day Circle, lauraday.com. I also have a training for people who really want to hone their intuitive skills. But again, intuition's not a belief, it's a tool. It works whether or not you believe in it. I train Fortune 500 companies. They're not there for belief. They're often very rude for the first 20 minutes until I, you know, make them say something they couldn't possibly have known in front of a whole group. And then when they realize they're just as weird as I am, they allow their intuition a free rein. You are intuitive all of the time. You are just not aware of it because guess what? Mind is a messy place and there's a whole lot going on, but you're intuitive all of the time. And once again, when you are embodied in this present, in your senses, in the moment now, contextualized and guided by your goals, you'll notice the intuition that you need to achieve a healthy, happy life and to reframe your past in a way that's empowering to your present.
Thank you very much, Laura. So Julia, can you please add where can we find Laura? So her Instagram.
That's the easiest, just lauraday.com.
Lovely. Anything else you would like to add, Laura?
I would like to finish by once again, something there's a lot of research on, which is the awareness of our connection when guided by a goal creates real change. So I would like every single person to be just aware of their goal and be aware using their senses. What does your goal taste like, feel like, smell like, look like? Don't worry about all the doubts and worries. Don't be super controlling. Be, in a sense, be your goal, inhabit your goal. Allow your goal to be part of your reality. And now suspend the illusion of separateness and just experience that you are connected to every single energy in the universe. You are connected to every event. You are connected to every person because we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And spirit is about energy. We are one energy, individuated. So now instruct that energy by being your goal. Instruct that energy to co-create with you. That is the real power of being an I in a we, an I in a spiritual universe, is that power of connection and being able to say, no, I can't see what I can't see, but you, even if I don't know you intuitively, don't have my same blinders from history. You know, I can't heal what is too painful for me to expose, but you with detachment can. So use that group energy, especially when you're feeling confused, lost, desperate, by just suspending the illusion of separateness, experiencing your goal, and noticing the connection. And then notice, make it evidence-based. Notice what happens after you do. So let's take a moment to just commit to each other's goals. And by the way, embodiment is also the best psychic self-defense. If you are full of you, you only connect with the energy around you and also non-locally around you, you only connect with even the energy of the history of your past that serves you and your goals now. So embodiment is really one-stop shopping. And I hope that, you know, different techniques work for different people. So for some of you, it'll be movement. For some of you, it'll be writing. For some of you, it'll be meditation. For some of you, it'll be yoga. For some of you, it'll be a juicy steak. Whatever it is that works for you, that's what works. So thank you. I really enjoyed speaking to you. And by the way, I respond to all of my emails. Make it short, but on lauraday.com, when it says contact Laura, I'm the only one who sees your email. I'm really interested in your questions. We all exchange reading and healing on Instagram at Laura Day Intuit. We are a very generous, interactive group where many intuitives and healers and business people and creative people go to support one another. You know, I think we are trying to emerge from a culture that everything needs to have a price. You know, when we work in community, we are strong. Together, we are strong.
Thank you very much, Laura. I cannot share like all the thank yous and admiration people have on the chat. Someone said you have given me so much and that they need a moment for it to sink in.
Well, lots of people can review, and that's one of the reasons. I usually do more free-flowing presentation, but one of the reasons I wanted to have things visual is I know that you can go back to this presentation, and then those visuals will be there for you to use. And also on lauraday.com and on Laura Day Circle at YouTube, there are lots of free resources. Because I know I gave a lot, but I really wanted to give everybody a structure to be able to use the rest of this conference.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Laura, for your time. It was really a pleasure. Just to let you know before we finish that, as you know, you can find the recordings for 48 hours, so it's for 2 days. You can watch it for free. And if you want to keep watching all the rest of the session, you have the Embodiment Conference package that is for you, that you can start buying today and then during the rest of the conference. And next session will be with Margaret Wetley on Who Do We Choose to Be? Embodiment as a Gift to Others. That will be with me as well hosting. Thank you again, Laura. It was really, really a pleasure to have you and looking forward to talking to you soon.
Including me. This is lovely, bringing all these different people and points of view together.
Thank you again. Thank you very much.